Welcome to the Corporate Venturing Insider Series, where I interview top practitioners in the CVC world and learn with you the best practices and golden nuggets that they have accumulated over their career. In this episode, we will be learning from Lisa Herrenberger, Associate Professor and Director of the Center for Social Impact at SA Business School in Barcelona, Spain. Lisa, could you take a few minutes to share your story and how you got to where you are today?
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. So I actually started as an investment banker. That was my first career. I was working on mergers and acquisitions in London, and then I moved to Spain, and I had this sort of feeling that I wasn't really contributing to society, actually more the opposite. Yeah. And I decided to do a PhD to become an expert on a topic and to be able to actually contribute much more strongly to society. And then I ran into this topic that was called venture philanthropy, which was quite new at this time. And it was really about sort of combining practices from venture capital, so about investing into companies, but much more with a philanthropic angle. So the investors were not so interested in financial return, but more interested in how can they help companies become more impactful? How can they help companies solve societal challenges, social challenges, but also environmental challenges? And I thought this was really interesting because I could sort of use my experience from finance, but actually do something good for society. So this is how I got into the topic that I've been passionate about for the past 20 years. And this has also evolved into what we now call impact investing, which is really a combination of sort of you're investing with a combination of financial return, but also social and or environmental impact. And then I also became an academic. So I'm a professor, but I'm also an advisor working with a number of different organizations across the investment spectrum from philanthropy, so foundations that are providing grants to social projects, but also moving across the investment spectrum to also include impact first and finance first impact investors. And I try to see how I, through my academic research, can contribute as well with a different perspective to these types of investors.
And so maybe I will start first with the first part of your career and how helpful it is for your second phase of your career. When you are an investment banker, this is really as rigorous as it gets, and M&A and complex and everything. When we think about impact investing, you also need rigor. And if anything, you need more rigor because it's very difficult to measure impact, but it's easier to measure financial performance. How much of that investment banking experience helped you with your role today?
Yeah, I'm laughing because I, as a professor, I also teach these topics. And sometimes with my students, and I'm a professor at a business school, ESADE is a business school based in Barcelona. Sometimes when I start teaching my course, students are like, oh, this social stuff is going to be like fluffy. You know, they have this impression that there's not going to be rigor. And I think at the end of the course, they're convinced that that's not true, or that you can actually do this with a rigorous approach and so forth. So I think that my background in investment banking has been helpful. It was a very good training. You learn how to be very professional, have very strong sort of work ethic. You work long hours, you learn a lot in a few years. And I think if you then compare the sort of financial and the impact part, that's another thing that I also mentioned to students, because they also think that, okay, it's going to be sort of very subjective when it comes to impact. But actually, since I've started working on the measurement part, a lot of progress has been made. So I think now we have very good frameworks and ways of measuring. But there will always be an element of subjectivity. So, I mean, obviously, it is different when you have then sort of a price. You attribute a financial value to something, then you can trade that, and then you can compare that and so forth. So that is obviously an advantage with financial valuations as compared to impact, because The issue with impact is that how do you compare, for example, a project where you're working with education for girls versus an environmental project? That it's completely different topics. How do you then put a value to this? And that is a bit the difficulty of impact, that you don't have like a good comparison. And sometimes like you then need to put a monetary value so that you can compare. But then that also involves a lot of assumptions, and then you get into sometimes also ethical issues. You know, why is the life of someone living in Europe worth more than the life of someone living in a poorer country, for example?
What would be good best practices for measuring impact?
Right. So I can explain a bit how impact investors do it. So I work with a few different impact investors, and there's been a bit of sort of a move, a standardization move in Europe, at least, because the European Investment Fund a few years ago launched a fund of funds. So it was a sort of a vehicle investing in impact funds. And they had a sort of requirement in terms of like how the funds that they invested in should measure their impact, which also created a bit of harmonization in the sector. What impact investors tend to do is, I mean, first of all, they have their own impact thesis at the level of the fund. Okay, so if you have a specific investment fund, let's say that you're a venture capital investor and you're investing in, let's say, the Netherlands, right? And then you have identified certain topics that you want to invest in. So like most of the first sort of funds were more generalist funds that said, okay, we just want to have an impact with whatever we do. But then over the years, they have also become more like sector specialized, which also allow them to be more impact focused with their investment strategy. So not just the financial return objective, but also an impact objective. And that allows them then to screen deals. And then once they start working with those companies during the due diligence, etc., they also understand better the impact that those companies want to achieve. So let's say that they invest in a company working on plant-based meat, which could be potentially an interesting topic for an investor. Then they say, okay, what can this company achieve in terms of impact? Well, the sort of idea behind companies working on plant-based meat would be that they're replacing consumption of meat, and then this would reduce CO2 emissions, because as you probably know, beef is a big culprit when it comes to CO2 emissions. So if you can actually have sort of people switching from buying meat to buying this plant-based alternative, then you can actually reduce CO2 emissions. But of course, like, you're making certain assumptions that, so you want to understand who are going to be the buyers of this plant-based meat, because if it's going to be vegetarians who otherwise would be eating vegetables, yeah, and now instead of vegetables, then the impact is zero.
Yeah.
So like one of the questions that you would ask is, okay, who's actually buying this? Who would be buying this meat? Okay, so these are the types of questions that the investor would be asking the potential investee to really see if they will have an impact. And then the sort of challenge as well, when you're a kind of an early stage investor, is that often the companies that you're investing in, they might not have the data yet or the evidence, right? So they say, yeah, I mean, our assumption is that our customers are going to be the ones that are otherwise would be eating meat, but we don't know that yet, right? So they need to set up a system where eventually they would be able to collect the data on the customers so that they would have that evidence, but they might not have that evidence at the very beginning. So for the impact investor, then they have these conversations with the investee, and they try to understand what is called a theory of change, which is really about how are you addressing a specific social or environmental challenge through your intervention as an entrepreneur, and how are you planning to, in some ways, address that problem, alleviate that problem, eventually eliminate that problem, right? which might be impossible, right? But especially for one single entrepreneur, but at least you want to understand how through your activities, you're actually achieving some sort of change in that problem. And that is what we call the theory of change. And then you kind of map out how are your activities leading to that potential change, which is what we call impact. So
No, it's a very good definition. And I think you mentioned baseline because you wouldn't have started collecting data. But what you're talking about also is a need of an hypothesis. For example, for this plant-based startup that this VC would invest in, they have to have an hypothesis that this is going to replace meat for people who eat meat today. So you would need to define your indicators or KPIs to be able to track whether your hypothesis proved correct or not, which then touch on your golden nugget of theory of change, which is if everyone who's buying this plant-based meat are already vegetarian, you have not done any change in terms of CO2 or methane. And then the limited partners who invested in that VC who's meant to do impact will be upset because there's nothing that has changed or you can't prove anything changed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. And it's not normally attributable to just one company. I mean, normally you need to think about like how do companies work together in a sort of an ecosystem? What is the contribution of each company to solving in together? Let's say how those companies and organizations are working towards solving a problem. And that's actually where the work of foundations becomes quite interesting. Okay, so I told you before that I work across the investment spectrum, not just with impact investors, but also with philanthropy. And where those types of organizations come in is that they tend to not just invest in companies, but they think more about systems and what kind of partners do you need to actually address problems. So if you think about, if you come back to my example, the plant-based meat, there might be changes that you need to make in regulation. For example, you might need to work with policymakers, you might need to work with schools and education to actually change mindsets, and this will take time and so forth. So philanthropy, and of course, I mean, public sector as well is really important in these changes. So what philanthropy can do that perhaps impact investors cannot do is to work on these kind of more long-term problems and also work on policy and advocacy and so forth, because those are activities that are not profitable, right? It doesn't make sense for an impact investor. Like, let's say that you have a venture capital fund, you know, you have a limited time frame for your actions. I mean, normally it's like a 10-year fund, so you invest in the first 5 years and then you divest, and you invest in companies. Like, you cannot put aside a lot of money for other things like building awareness and advocacy and so forth, because your LPs are going to say, like, what are you doing? So this is where philanthropy comes in, because they can work on these kind of broader topics and they're not so restricted in when it comes to the time frame and the financial returns that are required when you're working in investment.
And your example about plant-based food, if you start to have them going through the cost curve and the performance improve, which would be the taste of the meat, it tastes really good, then you could imagine that starts to really make the change. I want to ask a question because you talked about philanthropy, but also about venture philanthropy. What's the difference between the two and how to think about venture philanthropy?
Okay, that's a great question, because that was actually the topic of my dissertation, so I can speak for hours. No. So, you know, venture philanthropy was a bit of sort of a reaction against traditional philanthropy, trying to deal with some of the issues of traditional philanthropy. And those are basically that a lot of foundations are providing grants to projects. And the issue is that they often provide grants to, let's say, like social sector organizations that are working on solving problems, but they tend not to fund the actual organization, but the projects that they run. So let's say that I'm running an educational association, and then I have certain projects that I'm leading when it comes to, let's say, helping kids improve their math skills, which is fantastic, but the foundation then tends to provide funding just for that, to run that project, which means that the actual organization that is running the project doesn't get the get much funding. And there's almost like an aversion against funding the core costs of social sector organizations, because you want to kind of make sure that the end beneficiaries get as much of the funding as possible, which in a way, like, okay, that makes sense, but how are they actually going to have people to run it? How are they going to pay for the managers and the people who are implementing the projects? Which means that basically social sector organizations are underfunded and they're not able to attract talent and good people who actually are good at managing those projects. So it's a bit like a perverse situation. And this is what venture philanthropy was trying to sort of deal with. So some of the people who started working on venture philanthropy some years ago, this was like 20 years ago, they were coming from venture capital. And they said, okay, this is wrong. I mean, this is not working. Philanthropy is not working because we're just kind of pouring money into lots of projects. We have no control over how the projects are run. What are the results of the project? So they were not measuring the impact. And also, as I said, the actual organizations are not able to hire good people, and they're not able to have a long-term strategy. The funding tends to be short-term as well. So they were saying, okay, let's see if we can instead fund the organizations. We can provide unrestricted funding to the organizations that are running the project, so that they actually are able to hire good people, have a long-term strategy, and implement really impactful projects. So the financial return was not so important, at least not in the beginning. But sometimes they did notice that if you provide, for example, a loan rather than a grant, you might create a different type of relationship as well with the organization that you're funding. Because if there's a kind of an obligation to return the money, you also change your mindset of like, how are you going to use the money? And you also promote more of accountability and more of this kind of a business mindset in philanthropy.
Okay, so I was saying, maybe one way to think about it is like an impact tool set. So you have charity, you have venture philanthropy, you have venture capital with impact-driven investment thesis and objectives. You need all of it. And one other point about sustainability is, I mean, we invest in projects that are meant to create a more sustainable future, including for the environment. But as a corporate VC, we look at the ones that could capture value in a way that at some point they don't need VCs anymore, they can scale their impact. We invested in a company doing nuclear fusion. We hope at some point they will do plans that are profitable and they don't need VC money anymore and they can scale with green energy. I think the same for plant-based food. At some point, you want them to do really well and scale and the cost curve goes down. Everyone wants it.
So totally agree. And I think it's important also to keep in mind that you need those different types of funders, you know, across what you call the investment spectrum. So from philanthropy to more for-profit investment. I have tried to kind of understand how those different actors think. So that's why I'm now on the board of the GSMA Foundation. They work on mobile for development. So it's really the GSMA, which is the Association for Mobile Network Operators across the world. And they have a really wonderful foundation that works on financial inclusion, gender equality, and climate change. So they're thinking about things like, let's say, you know, when it comes to gender equality, you know, obviously, like now mobile phones are available all over the world, but in developing countries where maybe a family can only afford one mobile phone, and then that usually goes to the man in the family, and also that then women, when they access the phones, the content on the phones, it's not really suitable for them because the ones that are developing content for mobile phones are not thinking about rural women. So this also generates lots of inequality because we are advancing very fast when it comes to technology and improving a lot the processes and how we work. And then when certain people are just completely out of that, those advances, the inequalities really just increase. And so they work on projects to actually try to alleviate some of those inequalities, which is really interesting. But it was interesting for me as an academic to see like how they think differently about it.
I think additionality is really tough. And here I'm going to think about from a venture capital point of view, because VCs, even impact VCs, need to invest in the entrepreneurs who are going to be the big winner of the future. And if they are identified as a big winner of the futures, many VCs will want to invest in them. And if that's true, then the additionality requirement means that you should not invest because you already have other investors investing. And so I always found the additionality criteria to be really, really hard because it goes against the sustainability of a good project being invested in. So how did you reconcile that when you were advising on additionality? Because this is one I don't have an answer. I don't know how to think about additionality in a way that is sustainable.
So I think there are sort of also different ways of thinking of additionality. You know, so one is the what I mentioned before, that okay, if it weren't for me as an investor, this company wouldn't get financing. But then if you're like more a finance first impact investor, then you're like, okay, why would you invest in a company that no one else wants to invest in a way, right? And it works if you're what we call, we sometimes distinguish between what we call impact first and finance first impact investors. Like, so impact first, impact investors are more close to venture philanthropy. So the focus is really much more on the impact and less on the financial return. So you might sort of be happy if you just get your money back, because compared to philanthropy, that's still very different, right? In philanthropy, you give the money away and you don't get any money back because you're just giving grants. Whereas in venture philanthropy or like impact first, impact investing, you invest in projects that some of them might return money and some of them won't, but you're not like looking for huge financial returns. And if you have that approach, then the additionality is clearer, right? Because you actually will be providing funding to projects that otherwise wouldn't get funding. If you are a finance first impact investor, the additionality is more complex, right? It's so you might be additional because you have a proprietary pipeline, investment opportunities. So you are actually like very good at identifying those opportunities, and you are like the first investor in companies that perhaps otherwise wouldn't have been identified by more like mainstream investors, because you see the potential in the company because of the impact. If you're a finance first impact investor, you try to invest in companies where there's a correlation between the impact and the revenue growth of the company, so that by growing the revenues, you're also growing the impact. So you're additional, not just through the financial investment, but also through the non-financial support that you're providing.
Okay, very nice. Let me talk about Europe a little bit, because you're clearly based in Europe, in Spain, but you've been in different parts of Europe. How do you see impact investing and the ecosystem around it evolving in the last, let's say, 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, this is what I do. So I'm quite optimistic about the evolution. I think I've seen a tremendous growth, you know, in the past 10 years. So I started, as I mentioned, I started working on this like 20 years ago, and I'm based in Spain. I'm from Sweden originally, actually, but I worked in Brussels at the European Venture Philanthropy Association, which is now called Impact Europe. So I was also involved in sort of policy discussions with the European Commission and so forth. And it's been a very kind of productive dialogue from the beginning, where they were also talking about like what kind of regulation do we need to put into place, but we don't want to stifle the sector. We want to make sure that we're providing the right conditions for growth and so forth. So I think that made me quite optimistic about how policy can work in a good way. And the sort of impact investing has grown quite a lot in certain countries. France is a good example. Germany, Spain has really prospered in the past few years, which has been wonderful to see. So we have, in the past few years, a lot of new funds have been set up. There's now a wholesale fund of funds, 400 million euros, that is investing in impact funds in Spain, with money coming from the European Commission, actually. So things are moving. So yeah, I mean, I'm quite optimistic. And I also feel like, not just in terms of policy and in terms of funding, but also in terms of talent. So as a professor at a business school, and I'm teaching social entrepreneurship and impact investing, I definitely have a lot of interest from students who want to work in the field of impact investing. And we also help them sort of prepare for a career in impact. And this is also growing. Every year we have more students who are interested in this. But it's really like young people who are very talented, who want to have a great career, and they want to channel that energy into an impact-driven career. So this is what makes me excited and happy as well as a professor.
Very nice. But we're getting to the end of the podcast, and I have one more question I want to ask. And it's nice you're optimistic, so that's a good question to ask. What do you think success will look like for venture philanthropy 10 years from now? What does success look like?
For venture philanthropy? Yeah, that's a good question. I'm thinking that, you know, so like one of the things that I want to be able to do is to actually show that venture philanthropy works. So in a way that it's somehow like better than traditional philanthropy for certain topics. But I also think, I mean, it would be wonderful if this is a topic that is on the top of corporate venturing agendas. So corporate foundations that are working on philanthropy, that they really think that this is a practice and a way of working, which is a kind of natural thing. And I think it would be totally natural for corporate foundations to work in this way. So that would be success, and that people are actually know when I say venture philanthropy, that like people understand what that means. So that if this becomes something that people talk about and that people understand, and it becomes a natural practice for foundations, I think that would be success.
Very nice. And that would make it part of the tool set for impact. Lisa, exactly. Thank you so much for your time and sharing with us all of the impact investing and venture philanthropy. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much.